Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. About music with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz, here on this beautiful, beautiful May weekend. That was just Slow Build by The Range. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super, super pumped. He's playing tonight the final show of the Church's Tour and the final third night of the sold-out T5.
Yep.
Man.
It's crazy. It's fully crazy. It's funny because, like, you go in and, like, sold out shows, so people want to get there early, and you, like, I don't often look up while I'm DJing, and so, like, I'm looking down and then you look up and it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So many people. It's crazy.
It feels like a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
Because it really it's vertically big, not like horizontally.
Yeah.
But you'll be sharing some music, playing some stuff for us in the later part of the show.
For sure. For
awesome. Sure. And we got some pizza coming for you.
Awesome.
I want to welcome to Snacky Tunes as well, Peter Kim. Welcome.
Hey, what's up?
The executive director at MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, or the soon-to-be erected. What do you say when people talk to you about that?
Well, I mean, obviously our goal is to open a brick-and-mortar museum, and that's, you know, quite a few years off. We're hoping to open it by 2019, but I'd say MOFAD does exist right now. Last year, we launched a pop-up exhibit on Kickstarter, and we're touring that around the city. So, you know, we've got programs going, so it's here right now.
So for people who don't know what MOFAD is, what is it?
So I'm working with Dave Arnold. He's also got a show here on Heritage Radio Network.
Shout out to Dave.
That's right. What's up, Dave?
What's up, Dave?
He's in France right now drinking.
Bonjour, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Salut, Dave. So we're working on creating a museum dedicated to the culture, history, science, production, and commerce of food. If you think about it, in New York City, we've got museums for what? You know, moving image, you got sex, you got design, of course, history, science. But we don't have anything that looks at food, which is the basis of civilization. And we like to say it's the lowest common denominator of human interaction.
You get a lot of pots and pottery and vessels for food in museums, but not the food itself.
Exactly. And so, you know, when you think about the fact that food is incredibly popular right now, at least on a pop culture mm-hmm. level, and that there are these sort of deeper policy problems and public concerns with food and the food system. When you think about, you know, obviously obesity, the environment, and food waste, just how we're going to feed the growing planet and all that, you know, it's clear that we need to sort of reach a new level of caring about our food decisions. And that's something that museums have always excelled at, is really inspiring people to be more intellectually curious and to want to be more thoughtful about, you know, the way they make their decisions.
Has the government expressed an interest of getting involved when it gets closer to the finish line?
So we've talked a lot to the city of New York, and the Department of Cultural Affairs is definitely interested, and we've gotten some support from city council, but we're really not at the level yet where we can start getting, you know, some big support from the government. But it turns out that New York City has an enormous budget for supporting cultural organizations, mm. and so that's something we're definitely looking to tap later.
You don't have to answer. What is museum money look like? What does it cost to get? First off, how big is this museum going to be?
Right. Well, depends. So the question I have to ask back is, you know, at what time point in the future, you know, 50 to 100 years from now, you know, we see the museum as being the size of the Met or the American Museum of Natural History, where you could actually take an encyclopedic look at all of food right. and drink from around the world and through time. Okay, we can't do that just yet.
Not yet.
So the first thing we're going to do is do something more on the order of 30,000 square feet, 40,000 square feet. What that lets us do is we can do three different exhibitions. So say, you know, breakfast cereal, and take the whole story of breakfast cereal. Mm-hmm. And that includes the history of it, how it started, also includes the science of how breakfast cereal is made, what machines are used, what are the marketing techniques that breakfast cereal companies use, you know, what are the economics of breakfast cereal, what's the nutrition of breakfast cereal, all of this, you know, unpacking it all. Taking three topics like that, and then also having, you know, a rooftop garden, a lab, a classroom space, and a restaurant, you could do that in that kind of space.
I feel like chefs would be battling out to be the one behind the restaurant there.
Oh, hell yeah. So I think, you know, what we're looking at is trying to have a sort of rotating curator. Yeah. And so, you know, every 3 months or something, yeah. we'd rotate out a chef.
Seems fair.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that's great about the MOFAD restaurant is it's going to be like, you know, ancient Rome. You know, you go in and you'll be eating like garum and like ostrich and, you know.
We'll be sort of like what Next does out in Chicago, where every 3 months the whole thing's going to change, the whole room's going to change.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be this sort of immersive setting. I mean, I really don't, you know, like usually when you think about a restaurant in a museum, it's kind of like a rest stop and sort of a diversion from the programming in the museum where you get like your stale chicken.
Well, it changed a little bit. I mean, look at the modern and things like that.
That's true. So there has been a lot of good movement in sort of integrating food into the actual programming of the museum. But obviously at MOFAD, it's going to be sort of a seamless experience where I want people to be learning, you know, even in the restaurant.
Yeah. So let's talk about your successful Kickstarter campaign where you guys raised over $100,000 from an $80,000 goal, which I think speaks a lot to the commitment, how excited people are about it. And this was for the Serial Puff Gun.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy machine. It's like, you know,
violent.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's safe, but it's, you know, it's this 3,200 pound hunk of metal, and you put ingredients inside of it, and it spins around, and it's, you know, it's like 7 feet long, and pressure builds inside the thing, and then eventually you hit it literally with this heavy stick, and which we call the, well, I'll censor myself here, the whoop butt stick. And
you say whoop ass.
Oh, whoop ass stick. We call it the whoop ass stick. Yeah. And
it's the internet, man. No one.
There you go.
No rules. Right.
So anyway, you hit the thing with the whoop ass stick, and it opens a chamber, and the pressure drop causes everything to go just exploding out, and everything puffs out. And so, you know,
there's no button you can push.
No, man. It's just it's like you hit it with a stick. That's the way it works. This is actually so. Anyway, things puff out, and you know you can puff all sorts of stuff in it. You know we've done pasta, we've done beans. You can do. We think you could do like pork rinds. You know, obviously like rice, wheat, and all that stuff works really well. Anyway, so this is a machine that revolutionized the breakfast cereal industry. The one we have was the very machine that was patented in 1939. Used by Kellogg's and used by General Mills to create cereals like Cheerios and Kix and all that. So this is how they're making cereal back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And we've got one of these, and we've mounted it on a trailer, and we can drive it around the city and just, you know, blow stuff up. Like, food, that is.
Can you imagine if your dad was the whoop-ass stick guy at Kellogg's? What'd your dad do? Yeah.
Pop's the whoop-ass guy. I don't think that he'd want to bring him in for career day.
I think the best Kickstarter award might go to you guys for the person who donated $10,000 to get their own cereal.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I believe is everyone's lifelong dream.
Yeah.
Can you say who that was and what their cereal was? Or just what their cereal was if it's an anonymous donor?
Well, no, actually, we know who it is. It's actually a guy. I can't say who it is, but he actually only randomly stumbled across our Kickstarter campaign and thought that it was just a great idea, so he chipped in. We're actually still working with him on creating his cereal, but he's really excited about it. I mean, there's no real rush on his end.
Huh. I want to meet this guy who can just stumble upon something and drop 10K.
Yeah, it was nuts. I was like, we had already gone past our goal, and I was in a secondhand store in the East Village, and somebody, you know, I got the notice thing. We got a $10,000 donation, and I just was like, holy fucking shit. Yeah. And just started running around the store.
You're like, I'm going to have this shirt and that shirt and this shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Payday.
It's great. And so where can people see this machine? Do you guys have a tour list? Do you guys have dates set up?
Yeah, so right now the machine is in a warehouse in Red Hook. We've had to do some work on it. One of the random skills I've learned as being a food museum director is I've become a puffing gun mechanic,
which is
about the... I'd say it ranks up there as one of the most useless skills you could possibly have. But anyway, so we have it there. We're going to be touring it around this summer. The first time we're taking it out, it's not confirmed yet, but it's going to be at the Union Square Green Market the first Friday of June. In the evening, we're still talking, and you know, don't you know, write it in pen, put it in crayon, because we're our pencil. But we're also taking it out for this benefit we have on Wednesday.
Yeah. So. Well, we're gonna do a music break, and we'll talk about the benefit.
Wow.
It's gonna be great. If it's anything like your past events, it's gonna be a good time.
Yeah.
So all right, we got a song from Movement. It's off their new EP. That just came out on Modular Records. This song is Ivory here on Snacky Tunes. Thank you. Smooth Out Jams. It's a nice guitar solo right at the end. It's good. I like it. We got Peter Kim here from MoFad, and we are talking about their upcoming benefit dinner this Wednesday to get this amazing vision off the ground. I was lucky enough to go to the very first one that had the infamous ostrich that was wheeled out. It was a plucked ostrich.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah. I don't think anyone was expecting it.
Yeah, I think half of the people, like me, and perhaps you, were like just excited. I sort of wet my pants when I saw it. But the other half, I think, were terrified and also wet their pants. So I think, 100% pants wetting, right. But, half excited, half terrified.
Yeah, it was great. So one of the great things about having this organization and having so many luminary chefs on there is that your dinners are these star-studded, holy crap, moments of just amazing food and people.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's really great about MoFad, for our fundraising, we can quite literally and figuratively bake our mission into the food. And so it's not like we're, the History Museum and let's give you a fancy dinner and then, say some remarks here and there about a History Museum. Well, we're actually a food museum. And so when we do our fundraising dinners, the dishes themselves embody future exhibit ideas we have for the museum. So the one that you went to, Darren, and I, that's one I went to as well. We had the Food of Ancient Rome, for which Chef Mark Ladner did the whole roasted ostrich. And this time around, we're taking on eight new topics, and we're doing Korea before the chili, which will be looking at Korean food from the 14th and 15th century before the chili came from the New World.
I wonder what that was like.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of
bland. Bland noodles?
No. Wow. But it wasn't red. That's kind of like when you think Korean food, you think red. At least I do.
My mouth is going to be numb.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing TV dinners, and we kind of cheekily gave that to Michael Anthony from Gramercy Tavern. And so he's actually doing, he's making a TV dinner, a Salisbury steak, mac and cheese, peas and carrots. In the little tray and everything. So
those started, right?
Yeah,
they had all these chickens. I'm sorry, all these turkeys after Thanksgiving on these rail cars back in the 40s, and they didn't know what to do with it, and so they came up with the idea to do prepackaged dinners.
Yeah. So according to some, it was actual Thanksgiving leftovers. They didn't sell enough turkeys, and so they had a ton of turkey leftover from Thanksgiving. So like the biggest leftover Thanksgiving project ever, and one of the guys at Swanson, I think, had flown on airplanes and seen these little compartmentalized meals there and thought, oh, maybe I could do this with all these leftover turkeys, and it turned out to be something huge.
There you go. Now we have Hungry Man.
Hell yeah.
2 pounds of steak.
That's what I grew up on, man.
Really?
Yeah. I know the whole process of, puncturing with a fork.
Oh, yeah.
Peeling off a corner a little bit, or rotating a quarter turn, 50% first 8 minutes, then 100% at, 6 minutes, whatever.
What's
like
your favorite one?
Man, looking back, I really liked, when I was little, kid cuisine always seemed cool. You know what I mean? It's just the packaging. When you strip away the packaging, it's just crappy food. But
I like the dinosaur-shaped McNuggets.
Yeah. Those are exactly. Great. Yeah.
You won't be serving those on Wednesday, will you?
No.
And then you have Aaron. You have Franklin Becker, Amanda Cohen.
Yeah,
I mean a whole bunch of people.
Yeah,
and Wiley. What's Wiley going to do?
So he's doing the Four Humors, which is this sort of
good
medieval
humor, Mr. Softy. No,
okay. No, more like the medieval humors. Phlegmatic, sanguine. Yellow bile, black bile. So it's a sort of this medieval philosophy to eating where you're supposed to balance your humors out through eating. And so he's taking that one on. Overall, the entire benefit dinner is going to be a sort of edible preview of the museum, which itself, the museum in the future is going to be filled with food that you can eat. And so we'll have the puffing gun while people arrive. We're going to have, we're doing cured meats from Salumeria Rossi, and then we've got cocktails, looking at the history of cocktail, then these 8 courses.
Are you gonna have any cocktails from the 80s and 90s at the worst part of cocktail history?
Yeah, or maybe, I don't know, some people think the 70s were the worst, but yeah, there are a couple bad decades there.
Yeah. What is food on the battlefield? What was it, like Johnny Cakes?
Well, one thing is, so, you know, obviously feeding troops is extremely difficult when you think about the physical requirements of the food. You know, it needs to not spoil easily. It needs to be able to withstand shock. It needs to be small. It needs to be, you know, easy to eat, all this stuff. And so throughout history, there's been a lot of technological innovation that has developed from the need to feed troops. So, you know, a great example is Napoleon. At one point, you know, he wanted, I guess he did, you know, something like an RFP of sorts, like being like, you know, somebody come up with some idea to feed, you know, the troops or whatever. And somebody came up with the idea of canning, and that's where canning.
Right. So, and he gave the reward of whoever could figure out canning and about heating and things like that.
Exactly. And so.
Can you also start a documentary about that called Napoleon's RFP?
Yeah, exactly. Very sexy name.
Very sexy name. No, but then it was one of his generals or something like that who realized that if you boiled something and capped it.
Yeah, exactly.
It would keep and,
yeah. And so we've got Dominique Ancel doing that. And he actually, a little known fact, used to be a cook in the French military.
Really?
In French Guiana. And so.
So how would he make cronuts on the front line?
I don't know. It'd have to be like, I imagine like a little string you'd pull and the cronut would inflate, you know?
Can you imagine what the ration time price of that much butter would be?
Yeah, no.
It's insane. A king's fortune.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're only for the generals.
And then, yeah. And then you have, the amazing Daniel Krieger taking photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Who I love and adore.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's so good.
Yeah. The most styling photographer out there.
So styled. That mustache.
Oh, unbelievable.
So tickets, any left?
We're actually all sold out. But, which...
hey, this... Oh, my God, this is amazing. Sorry, you can't come.
Yeah, well, but...
Well, when we booked this, it wasn't sold out.
No, no, it was not sold out. Sorry.
So well done.
Yes.
Way to really come in here and just make this...
A jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's sold out.
Yeah. But we are going to have a lot more events like this.
Yeah.
And so... we're here to stay. And so, you know, if you people want to get on the mailing list, we have our website, mofad.org, and you can sign up and hear about our events coming up. We'll be doing one more thing toward the end of the year, and that's going to be more, this benefit we're doing this Wednesday, it's mad expensive, but you know, we're targeting.
How much were tickets?
Starting at $600. And so,
how much of that is going to the... Like, I imagine everyone's donating food, time, space, things like that.
It's still expensive.
I know. So, I know.
Yeah. So, I mean...
How many people is it for?
140 people.
Yeah. Just need a lot... That's a lot of plateware.
A
lot of room you need.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of plates, lots of cutlery and all that stuff. I've been something of a wedding planner for the last few months, which is, also another skill that I didn't expect to be learning as a...
Now, that skill you can apply to a lot of people.
Exactly.
So, what are the next steps? How does this... get closer to the goal line?
Right now, I mean, the number one priority for us is fundraising. And so, you know, we hadn't done a real big fundraising event since 2011. So this was our way for us to invite, you know, people in, you know, in our circle and start to build our network and, you know, have them invite people to come and be introduced to the concept. And this year, you know, I'm just going to be out there pounding the pavement and trying to find people who can be a part of the founding of, you know, what I think and a lot of people think will be a major cultural institution in New York City. Yeah.
Shaking hands, eating sugar babies, that type of stuff.
Yeah, something like that.
It's awesome. So give us some nuts and bolts, website, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, Museum of Food and Drink, www.mofad.org. And, you know, you can pretty much find everything you need there. Keep an eye out for the Puffing Gun this summer.
And you'll have to let us know what this guy's cereal is going to look like.
Yeah. I'll come back for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. High fives to everyone else who's involved with this project. It's such an exciting thing. We have a song from the new Mars Volta at the Drive-In project called People Forget. The name of the group is Anti-Mask or Anti-Mask. I never know with those guys. Here we go on Snacky Tunes.
Coming up fast, screaming to the current of life.
All right. Definitely more at the drive-in than Mars Volta. Little anti-mask, people forget. We're super pumped to have... sorry. Let me start that over. We're super pumped to have the range in-house. I'm sorry. I had a little piece of pizza stuck in there. Thank you for taking time. I mean, I know you're super crazy busy with your shows this weekend.
Oh, of course. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And then, welcome. Welcome to Brooklyn. Oh, and shout out to Brooklyn Nets. 104-103, game 7.
Amazing.
Amazing. Basketball.
Yeah, we were just saying it's an amazing finals season this year for the NBA.
It is. I feel like the NBA is usually a blowout.
Oftentimes it is. I mean, but it feels like the teams are finally well-balanced, which is great. It's exciting to watch. Hasn't been that way, really, for quite some time.
No. So how's life? How's everything?
It's been great. I mean, I've been on a tour with Churches since, I think, like the 20th of April. Just not super long, but it's been hectic. I mean, like, it's a huge operation.
Is it a machine?
It's a really well-oiled machine that's function. I mean, in the best way possible, yes. It's a machine. I mean, to see them tear down and set up the light show is just unreal.
That light show, all about these days.
It's crazy.
So how'd you get hooked up with them?
So I had read on some BBC Radio 1 interview that I think Martin had heard of my record. And I just tweeted at them, like, I think on, like, Christmas Eve or something. Just sent them a message being like, hey, guys, like, love your music, would love to be there. I didn't hear much, and then, they asked, and it was, like, that's the craziest story. I've never really heard of any of that stuff happening, you know, like.
They must really like that record.
I think
maybe
it's
gotta
be.
Your bold audacity.
Yeah.
Do you know what song it was, or what they were talking?
It must have been Metal Swing. Oh. It would have had to have been.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard that too. God bless the internet.
It's an amazing thing.
Crazy.
I mean, honestly, it's been amazing. And it's just great, yeah.
So how'd you get started doing all your beats, all your music?
So I used to make like kind of like post-rocky stuff in my basement when I was a kid, just kind of recording out of like a little Fostex kind of tape machine.
Mm-hmm.
And kept doing that through school. And then one of my friends started DJing. And I, at the same time, had heard of... like Scotty B and all those Baltimore club guys. And for some reason, like it clicked in my mind that there was something rhythm. Cause I was a drummer first.
Mm-hmm.
And with them chopping those breaks, it was just, something clicked for me. And I just started kind of making pretty harmonic kind of Baltimore club stuff.
Oh, nice.
And then just kept making the project. And this one started in 2011. This project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were there other iterations of yourself before then?
Yeah. I used to go by Stegosaurus.
Okay. But became extinct?
Right. Nice one.
Sunday.
Put a fork in it.
Yeah. So that was that one.
Yeah, and it was great. I mean, it was pretty rewarding at the time because I felt like I just kind of run its course with that one. So
yeah.
It was just a nice, fresh thing to make, and it was exciting. Once it got off and running, I was making a lot of music, and it was great.
You know, it's a very special skill to know when something that you've created needs to stop.
Yeah, especially when it's your own thing, you know,
because
there's no, like, I understand when it's a band and it's like, oh, someone left, like, we can't actually be called this anymore. That's the time, right? But from yourself, like, there's a mental thing that you need to get over, I think.
You go, maybe. Just start something new. You want to play something?
I would love to. I think I'm going to play something off Nonfiction, if that's all right.
Or yeah, it's totally cool.
EP, yeah. Cool. Let me pop it up here. I'm going to play Telescope.
Okay.
Which is the 10th song on Nonfiction.
We'll be right back.
Dude, that's nice.
Thanks, man.
It's nice. I know we were just talking about Beyonce, but I don't know if you saw that SNL skit from last night.
I haven't yet. I just saw it trending.
It's pretty good. The Beyoncé, what happens when you talk poorly about Beyonce, it's really good.
Oh, because it was, what's his name? Who's the
Andrew
host?
Garfield.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, I have to watch that.
Yeah. That was some chilled out stuff. That was a nice track.
Thanks. Yeah, basically the whole idea is like trying to have like the halftime and full-time feel existing at the same time, and I think it does end up being like just lets you get into this nice zone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's pushing and pulling at the same time. It's nice. Yeah. So being on tour, I mean, it must have been so awesome, especially with your 10 South by Southwest shows, if I remember correctly.
It's crazy.
That's crazy. Was it over just music, like, in 3 days?
Basically, yeah, right? It was pretty much just like...
Well, you know, interactive is now sort of like...
Yeah, no. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I meant, I think we actually even skipped one of the days of South by and had no shows or like, only one show, and then they were all like...
Only one.
Well, it's funny. I mean, what's it like? It's just hilarious, because it's literally my first time at South by, and to, like, be thrown into that level of... Like go. It was madness, you know.
Dude, 10 shows is. I mean, so what? You're playing like an early afternoon spot, and then like some nighttime.
Yeah, you play an early afternoon spot, and then you'll play like sort of like a seven p.m. show or something, and then like the Warp Lucky Me party was like a later show, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and then you also have like the luck of only having to really set up.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the only way we could do it. And I'm so happy that I could, 'cause literally every show was a blast, so it was fun, but. If I had I can't imagine even 2 shows for a band, even if it's like to lug your
drums. I mean, but that's the whole thing now. Like, bands play like 10 shows during.
It's
I'm assuming they're maybe setting up cymbals, but not a whole drum kit, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like it's especially South by, it's so much more turnkey.
Yeah. No, I remember, but like, I was playing with machine drum and like the venue didn't have a backline, you know, like hilarious stuff like that. Like, okay, so what are you supposed to do? You know,
yeah.
It's funny.
Did you get any good food when you were down in Austin?
We had a lot of food trucks and breakfast burritos and tacos. Say again? Oh, yeah. There's this crazy, like, sushi tapas place that was just, like, out of town a little bit. It was unreal.
Uchi?
Yes.
Is that
Oh, yeah. Dude. My boys.
Like, that's unreal.
Uchi Ko?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Those are my boys. Shout out Tyson, Paul.
I've never been to a spot like that before. It's always just like, oh, you can have tuna roll or steak roll, you know?
Shout out to Philip as well. That's crazy. Up. Those guys are great. Yeah. And now that you're on tour, you rolling deep with the food now that you're like playing the sold out shows. And I mean, backstage, it must have been a nice spread back there.
They do. I usually always get just some like vegetables and hummus and stuff because a lot of the dinners are a buyout, so. You can roll out, but there's been some good spots. Like Denver had an amazing, what do we have? I had a food truck there. Yeah, it's been great. Even Salt Lake City, like, randomly had, like, a pretty good.
You're in the west side. You're sort of near Daisy Mae's Barbecue.
I might have to try. I haven't had any good food at the Terminal 5 shows. We've been running around a bunch. So. Except for Roberto's right now. Actually.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So once you finish the tour... And which is tonight. Do you go home? You go back to the studio? Yeah, I know you have one more show tomorrow.
Yeah, we have one more show at Brooklyn Bowl tomorrow. But then, yeah, I'm looking forward. I don't have anything, I think, until the end of May with Primavera. I'm doing a couple shows around that.
I want to go.
The lineup is ridiculous.
I sort of just want to go to Barcelona.
Oh, that's also a great reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lineup on the beach is sick. That's going to be a lot of fun. Have you played it before?
No. It's my first time.
Do you enjoy playing rooms or more than festivals, or what do you like? What do you think allows you to connect
better? I do find festivals more challenging, right? So, like, it's because you know you've DJed, like, it's a different thing. Like, people aren't necessarily there, especially when I'm playing all my own music. Like, it's a very conflicted crowd because they don't know. It's like, is he playing all this music? Like, what's happening? Am I supposed to dance? Am I supposed to just head nod? But I kind of enjoy the challenge at this point. I don't think it'll ever be a novelty just to look up and just see that many people is kind of unreal.
It's unreal. A lot of kids out there.
Yeah.
So many kids.
And like, you have to think every single person, like, they're processing it differently, and like they're thinking about it their own way, and they're coming at it with so many different things, and like it's pretty special.
And it's just crazy. I mean, I guess because whenever you see the old stuff, like the giant crowds from the 60s, 70s, 80s, it's all rock music. And now that like electronic music has really hit that level. You know, I remember, God, who was it? It was Oasis and Prodigy, and they were playing, it was something like MTV special back in the 90s, and there was like 250,000 people watching them. And just seeing the overhead shot, you go, holy shit, that's a lot of people. And then you go, actually, relatively, that's not a lot of people. That's only 250,000 people.
Right, right. And the world is huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I mean, it's always fun to play in a small room when people like your music.
Correct.
But if you're in a small room and people don't like your music, you're like, there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, when you play a festival, sometimes people are just vibing and they just like what you're playing. They may not know you.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, yeah, they're the more I play each, like, they're definitely different things, and you really have to kind of force yourself to come at it from a different angle each time, which is nice. Like, another analog that kind of breaks down is when you're a band, like, you're going to play your same set
pretty much
the whole time. I have some freedom, which is nice.
I mean, did you play 10 different sets at South By?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which was fun, like, to be able to...
Well, it's fun. I mean, you're not just like, here we go into this song.
Yep.
And Johnny's going to do his banter, and there's that shitty joke again. Yeah. You want to play another track for us?
Yeah, certainly.
What do you got?
I have Seneca. No, let's play Metal Swing. Metal Swing, off Nonfiction. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Good point. Let's play The One.
Thank you.
So nice.
Thanks.
So everyone warms up for shows differently. What's your ritual?
I don't know. I forget what show it was, but like I used to get so anxious, like beyond
really?
Anything. Yeah,
you seem like such
shows.
A chill dude.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Is like all of a sudden, like I think it's when I don't even remember, but all of a sudden, no, it was a show in Mexico City. It was this crazy thing. It was on this like military compound, right?
Of course.
Which is hilarious. People were just going nuts. And all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? Like, I just had the most scary car ride of my life where, like, the cab rider is, like, just, like, diving. Like, I can't get so anxious about the shows anymore. And ever since then, it's been kind of, like, no real need to get warmed up. Like, just kind of roll in, no anxiety. Because I used to actually, like, go through my set list, make sure everything's going to be perfect. Like, listen to it on Serato Box. Like, have a spare Serato Box to be able to play them back and forth to each other. All this stupid stuff. And now I can just kind of, like, sit back and have a glass of wine and, like...
Oh yeah,
which is nice.
Little
yeah.
Vino.
Yeah, maybe that's it as well.
Yeah, no, I you know it's you're performing. You're up there. It's work. You're going to work.
Right.
If I could have wine before I went to work every day, I'd be a lot happier too. So you're going to be playing Primavera.
I am.
Which is going to be so exciting.
It's crazy.
Talk about a party.
It looks crazy. I mean, I'm trying to like. I've seen like what I think is the stage we're playing. It's like the Pitchfork stage, and I know Churches and Julio Bashman will be there, and like John Wizards is playing right before me. But there's like I don't quite understand. Like it's like a huge compound. Like it looks like there's like what like 10 stages, 9 stages there. It's crazy.
It's awesome.
I'm so stoked.
Are you going to be doing the whole bouncing to different European festivals, going around?
Yeah, we are playing. We're playing. In Utrecht and Rome. I start out in Rome and then to Stockholm and then playing a little one in Hackney.
I love Stockholm.
Yeah. It's been fun.
Stockholm
yeah.
In the summer is awesome because there's only 4 hours of nighttime.
Are you kidding? I had no idea that was a thing.
In like Copenhagen and Stockholm, the sun sets in the summer like in June, like late June, July. Sets around 11:30. It's rising by 3:30. And by 5 in the morning, it's what you consider afternoon.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It sort of messes with you.
I mean, that's got to mess with your whole life, but it's cool to visit. And like,
yeah.
Especially for a show.
Yeah, Stockholm's great. Great food, great fashion. Get sweaters. If you like sweaters.
It's the spot.
Stockholm's got that sweater game on lock. But you're excited to tour? Are you going around with any of your... You're going with Churches, but any of your other buddies hanging out?
No, not this one, really. I don't think I'll get to do that maybe until October. But nothing's firmed up yet. Yeah, no, it's usually literally just me. But
is it just you?
Yeah, it's just me when I go out.
No buddies?
No buddies.
All right.
We'll remedy it eventually. I don't mind, actually. It's still really... I haven't been to most of these places, so I try to, like, go to a museum, you know, see as much as I can.
Yeah, man. I think it's important because sometimes a dark room at 3 in the morning is a dark room at 3 in the morning anywhere in the world.
Completely.
Yeah. So the EP's out, and then what's next?
I don't know. I've been writing a bunch. I have a lot of music, but it's important to me that I'm kind of like continuing this narrative that I started with Nonfiction and the EP.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really taking it slow. Hopefully something out again in the, in maybe September, October, but, nothing set in stone.
Okay.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But you
it's
got
all
I mean,
good.
And you got the remix, the Church's remix.
I do. I do. I do. That was a fun one, man. Her voice is fun to have the stems too.
Yeah. I'm sure that'd be a lot of fun.
It's so much fun.
Do you want to close on that?
Oh, definitely, actually.
All right, so why don't you, while you pull it up, why don't you send out your, where people can buy your EP, find your music, see your tour dates.
Say again? Sorry. So I'm also just want to make sure I mention I'm playing, I think, 10:30 tomorrow at Brooklyn Bowl?
Shout out. Best hospitality in the game.
Yep, I'm stoked.
Do you know what you're going to order? Fried chicken? Wings? Ribs? Milkshake?
It's got to be the fried chicken, right?
So
the
good.
Milkshake or something? It's got to be. You can find, obviously, Spotify, iTunes. Donkey Pitch released the Nonfiction and this EP, so you can find them on Bandcamp, the Donkey Pitch Bandcamp. It's been fun. But yeah, this is my remix of Churches.
All right, well, thank you so much. Greg returns next Sunday. And we'll be having our first show together in I don't even know how long. And I must shout out my fallen Flyers. Great season. Rough loss to the Rangers. We'll get them next year. Here we go. Thank you so much for everyone who listened, and we'll see you next week.
I'll be
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.